Welcome to Rewatchable, episode 181. We're back to talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, season 4, episode 14, Goodbye, Iowa, and Angel, season 1, episode 14, I've Got You Under My Skin. My name is Selena. I have super fans, Natalie and Caitlin, with me, and one lone newbie, Brittany.
You wouldn't Hello. Have it any other way.
Yep. We, you know, these are very special episodes of Buffy and Angel, so we decided this had to... No, I'm kidding. They're totally not. They're just regular old episodes of Buffy and Angel, but I'm sure we will have a good discussion about them anyway, and I hope that Brittany will wave the newbie flag high. It's going to be fun, I hope. So before we get into the discussion, just let me remind you of the contact information so you can chime in. Don't forget to keep your comments spoiler-free because, as I just said, there are newbies on the show that we don't want to get too spoiled about what's coming up. So you can email rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us at re_watchable. You can find this post on hypable.com. And you can find us on Tumblr at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And heading into fun facts, let's start with Brittany.
Hi. So, lone newbie here. I'm actually going to see Falsettos as soon as this is over in New York, and I'm very excited because it's only in previews, but it's only running for 14 weeks, and I got really, really, really cheap tickets for front row mezzanine, and I'm pumped.
Awesome. That is fun. And Caitlin, how about you?
Mine is just continuation of last week that my new dog and I are still getting used to each other. And I have a dog trainer coming in on Friday to work with us, so because he's terrified to go outside. So we're going to work on that.
Oh, God. I hope that works out. I'm very excited about your dog updates, by the way. Very nice to hear. And how about you, Natalie?
I'm good. I'm here. I'm good. Jealous of Brittany going to see a show without me. I'm sure she sees many a Broadway show without me, but I'm very sad. And the star of this show is the star of the last musical we saw together. So,
Oh, I didn't even think about that. It is.
Oh, why are you not thinking of everything in your life in relation of how it connects to me 24/7?
I'm so sorry. Like, I'm so sorry.
Excuse me. Anyway, my fun fact for the week is that I have sitting next to me on my desk the largest pile of money I have ever personally handled in one go. Like, okay. I have like about $3,000 in cash sitting on my desk next to me. No one robbed me. It won't be.
I'm so glad this isn't live.
Yeah. Because a friend of mine came and was doing some events here and made some money, and instead of getting it changed at the airport, I sent him the money on PayPal and kept the cash, so I have to put it in the bank. But it's a ridiculous amount of money, and our money is really brightly colored, like bright yellow, bright red, and bright blue, so it looks like kind of weird, like, if you know what I mean, like it looks really strange, and just it's just a weird sight to see. I feel like Scrooge McDuck or something, like that I should throw it all on the bed and roll around in it or something.
I think you should. I think that's the only like logical thing to do here.
Anyway, moving on.
That's a fun fact. Wow.
It's really random. It's just literally staring me in the face and I'm like, that's weird.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's super random. My fun fact isn't so much fun as puzzling because, like, it's no secret that I am somewhat mathematically challenged, but even I find it bizarre that I set aside 4 hours today before we started recording to watch 4 episodes, like 2 Buffys and 2 Angels. So I was all caught up. And each episode is like 42 minutes. So you'd think that I'd have like 30 something minutes spare, but it took me all 4 hours. Like I just finished the last episode of Angel. So each episode took an hour, even though I took no breaks and had no pauses, and I don't understand. So
really
I'm confused.
That's really weird.
Yeah,
did you have
like,
to change discs every time, or was it on Netflix?
No, I streamed it. I streamed it all. That's so I don't
weird.
Know why like the minutes were longer than they were supposed to be.
That's really weird.
I'm just sitting here like totally dumbfounded. And I'm like, is it something with the like PAL and NCTS so that our like it goes slower for us than in America? It's like more sped up. Like if you watch something in America, the voices are more high pitched because they speak faster. Yeah. Yeah. But like then the minutes would be longer. So I don't understand.
That's really weird.
I actually think I get what you're talking about because I caught up on This Is Us and I watched both episodes of Pitch yesterday and I watched Buffy and Angel and I watched two episodes of Jane the Virgin and it took my entire day, like from 10 in the morning until like 7 at night. And I'm like, I didn't really watch that much content.
Yeah, and like 40 minutes to an hour, you should gain an hour every three episodes. You know, yeah.
It was my whole day.
I don't understand. I think maybe like the internet maybe makes it slower. Like I have no idea. Like the episode breaks, like the long, I don't know. I have no idea. Anyway, super confused. That shouldn't take up our discussion, but I just wanted to share with everyone because I felt like it was worth sharing. I don't know. but so let's talk about one of the hour long episodes that I watched today, which was Buffy episode 14. Of season 4, Goodbye Iowa. We're over the hump of season 4 now, and we're beginning to head into a more tangible conflict than what we've seen so far, and it's getting very interesting. Let's just call it that. The synopsis, which has been written by Brittany, is that right?
No, Mitch wrote it.
Okay, cool. So Mitch wrote this synopsis, which reads, in this episode, Buffy is mad and Riley is sad, at least until Riley turns mad and Buffy turns sad. And then Humpty Dumpty fell off the wall. Frankenstein Adam is on the loose and killing kids until he gets his hands on Riley and creepily claims a familial connection. Riley is losing it thanks to Dead Walsh's drugs and he almost shoots somebody's grandma before getting sent to a military hospital to wither up like a blue Iowa corn husk. Meanwhile, Willow is doing magic with Tara, and Spike gets beat up by demons who are not happy with his good guy antics. There we go. That is the episode. The Buffy Wikipedia links describes it as a Riley-centric episode, by the way, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, I actually saw that on the Buffy guide site that we use sometimes. Like the Buffy wiki is really good and really updated, but there's that old BuffyGuide.com, which has like been around since forever. And like what they used to put like personal reviews on the end of each of their recaps. And like I was just scrolling it and one of the women there was definitely like, this was a standout for Mark Blucas. Like this was, you know, really important for Riley and stuff like that. And I guess, you know, some stuff about him is revealed and he does put in a good acting job, but like,
I wouldn't call it a Riley-centric episode. Like the Seppo is a Sander-centric episode. You know, I don't feel like this was the same.
It's not really his point of view. It's not so, it's not like following Riley's point of view around that much. Yes.
Yeah. But it definitely,
his story is the A plot.
Exactly. Buffy's story, but that's the thing. I think that Buffy's point of view is more important than Riley's because Riley sort of spurs Buffy to act a certain way, but he definitely goes through like huge changes in terms of how he views the initiative and everything that happens with Professor Walsh. But at the start of the episode, you know, we start with everyone sort of gathering at the Scooby, you know, hangout place of Giles's house to talk about what happened last week, which was obviously that Professor Walsh set Buffy up to die. And, you know, Spike is there and reasonably suggests that Riley may have known about everything that happened. And I don't know about you guys if you ever sort of had any doubts about where Riley's loyalties might fall on this. Because there was a moment there when he could have turned against Buffy, but he didn't.
Is
he just a good guy?
Yeah, I didn't doubt that he was a good guy, but I did like that Spike still has a little bit of a purpose, which is to serve as devil's advocate, basically. He is the one to sit there and be like, okay, but you have to also see this a different way. Like, nobody can just always be on Buffy's side. We have to broaden our horizons here and see that, you know, this is the guy who's closest to the initiative. He may actually literally be brainwashed into thinking that this is the right thing to do.
Right. And it's interesting, sort of, you say that, you know, this is sort of Spike's purpose now. And it's interesting because once again, you know, we had him sort of break with Giles and say, look, I helped you for the money, but don't think we're pals. Then the moment that Spike is in trouble, of course, he runs back to the Scoobies so that they can help him again. And he's sort of back with the group now in the way that I still think is amazing. But I don't know what you guys think about that and why the Scooby Gang is sort of still protecting him.
See, I think this is this whole thing of, like, not being able to kill someone unless it's red-handed, if you know what I mean. Like,
yeah.
There would be other people out there, other heroes or other, you know, demon dispatchers or whatever you call them, who would, you know, okay, we've got this guy in custody. We know here are all of the bad things he's done in the past. You know, we'll just kill him and be done with it, if you know what I mean. Like, because of all of his past crimes, he has earned that, or, you know, we know he's evil, so we're going to kill him. But it seems like they can't, like, do it, like, when he's, or at least, I don't know if it's, like, you know, the show, that would seem, like, too harsh and too bad for, like, Buffy to do, to kill him, you know, when he's not actually in the middle of, like, a fight with Buffy or, like, caught red-handed killing someone. But he's just sitting around not doing anything, even though all the stuff that he's done is ridiculous. It's kind of like, Selena, you'll feel me on this because I've obviously been catching up with Supernatural, how Dean can never kill Crowley. Like, and how it's, you know, you just, oh, we'll get you next time. We'll get you next time. And there's always a next time, but it's never like, oh, you know, it's convenient, or, you know, they work together so much that it humanizes him a bit. And I think that that's what's going on with Spike. Is that number one, they're working together, you know, number two, he can kind of help them. But even if he wasn't helping them, I feel like that they are good enough people, like, if you want to call it quote unquote good enough people, to not just execute someone in cold blood, if you know what I mean.
And it's the same reason why the demon bar Willies can exist and Buffy can sort of, like, walk into it and there's
not just
a sort
start
of
stabbing
understood
people.
Yeah, there's like a ceasefire in Willies bar that's sort of agreed upon, because as long as they're not actively harming anyone and as long as they're not planning to harm anyone, then it's like, okay, well, you know, live and let live kind of thing. And that's a funny situation with Spike, because as we can see by his personality as well, like, it's not that he's not evil. It's not that he wouldn't kill them all if he had the chance, but he's also kind of, you know, he's not actually actively harmful in his behavior. No. And there's a lot more to him than just the evil aspect. And they sort of, I think they recognize that, like, it's easy for them as it is for us to forget that he's evil, and they forget all the time.
Yeah. It's kind of like, oh, we know him. He's just a guy. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's kind of like having a lion at the zoo, and you sort of get comfortable and you, like, forget that it's dangerous, and, like, you go and you're like, oh, you know, it knows me now. I can pet it, and then it bites your hand off, and then you're like, oh, I should have known. Oh, damn it again. It keeps happening to me.
Except Spike can't bite.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like, you know,
I think that's another thing as well. Like, it would really be, like, killing him in cold blood, but, like, it's a matter of, like, whether that would be morally, we would not necessarily think that was morally okay for the show to do, or for someone like a hero to Buffy, like Buffy to do.
Probably don't think it's morally okay either.
But but in reality, like, I don't know, like, you know, if people would do that, if people were like, well, we know that you're evil, just because we didn't catch you right now doing evil, we can name all of these people we know that you've killed and that you're a vampire and you don't have a soul, you're evil.
But maybe that's the problem, though, with Spike, because they don't actually know anyone that he's killed, right? Like, am I wrong? Has Spike actively, like, he's hurt Willow and Xander, like, he's tried, but he hasn't actually...
Yeah, but he hasn't pulled a Jenny Calendar.
Exactly. Know? Yeah, they don't have any personal, like, it's kind of like an abstract thing. Like, yeah, we know he used to kill people, but we've never seen him. Like, I know that doesn't make it okay, but to them, like, to the audience too, he hasn't killed anyone we like, so we're like, he's fine, you know?
You know, he's just doing what he needs to do.
Right, and it's sort of a funny, like, you know, because like, compared to Adam, the, you know, the enemy, like this, the demon that goes outside and kills a little boy, and you're like, okay, well, he's a bad guy, you know, there's no redeeming parts of his humanity left, you know.
It's weird, because Spike really is designed for you to kind of want to hand wave his badness, which I don't know if that's, like, a good thing or not. Like, I think that that's, like, should we be letting people get away with
that
with really evil characters
thing,
but
Right. But, I think it's a setup. It's set up to be a, and I'm curious too to hear what Caitlin has to say about it. I have no idea what you even feel about Spike. I thought that was a very interesting spin on a vampire after Angelus. It's a nice contrast to that because he was set up so clearly for us to be terrified of him. Where Spike is like, oh, you know, even with the characters and the audience, it's like, oh, but I kind of like him. So I have to constantly remind myself that he's evil, but it's really hard, you know? It's like a moral thing that they are setting, you know, the audience and the characters sort of up to, if that makes sense. But I don't know, Caitlin, do you have any thoughts you want to add?
I mean, my thoughts on Spike at this point kind of just go back to he's helpless, basically. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. in the eyes of the humans, he's literally helpless. He probably couldn't even, like, flick them without getting a headache. Mm. Like, so you can't really, in good conscience, like, harm him. And the only ability he has to hurt anybody is potentially to help them. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, and that's
kind of put up with him.
Yeah, and like, I'm so sorry that I keep talking about this. I just find it so fascinating. But it's kind of like, you know, even looking at a vampire, you say, well, okay, it's not the vampire's fault that it's evil, right? Like, that's its nature. It doesn't have a soul. It's programmed to be evil. Like, it's in a demon's mm-hmm. nature to be evil. So, if it's not, it's kind of like you, I don't know, you capture a wolf and you train it to be your pet. I don't know. It's hard. I don't know where I'm going with this. I just wanted to talk about it because I think it is an interesting thing to look at. Well, if a demon isn't actively doing something evil because it can't because it's been like muzzled, but you know that it would if it was free, do you punish it for what it's been designed to do? Like, I don't know. I just think it's interesting. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, it's just interesting because we've always talked about the amount of, you know, humanity and personality that Spike has. And so when he's not able to harm people, and I don't think he really, you know, wants or doesn't want to harm people. Mm-hmm. He's just a vampire and it's like base instinct. So when he's not able to follow that base instinct, all that's left is his humanity, if you know
right.
what I mean.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I don't know whether that's like, he was an addict and, you know, now he's gone clean kind of thing. And, you know, now this is what's left, like, after that, if you want to call it kind of, like, attacking people, you know, some sort of compulsion or addiction. But mm-hmm. I don't know. It's weird. And I feel like that there are worlds where, you know, where he would have just been killed immediately, you know, just for being a vampire, you know, and not, you know, just because he can't do anything. It's like, oh, that's even easier to take him out. But, you know, these kids clearly, you know, have mm-hmm. a bit more empathy than that. So,
yeah. Anyway, sorry about that, guys. So Mitch has a point in the doc here. You know, he wants us to note, and I guess I will, that he's cast the Scooby gang into actual characters from Scooby-Doo, which is funny because obviously Sarah Michelle Gellar was in the Scooby-Doo movies with Seth Green, by the way. Who else would Buffy be but Daphne, he says, and he casts Angels, Fred, okay, Willow is Velma, Xander is Shaggy, Spike is Scooby, okay, so Anya is Scrappy-Doo, and Giles is Daphne's chauffeur, Jenkins. Objections? Agreements?
I mean, I can't say that I've given it that much complex thought. I don't know about Angel as Fred. I feel like Riley is more of a Fred.
He's a Fred. If anyone is a Fred,
it's
him.
If we're going to have someone in there, I think, it's Riley. But
for sure. I actually don't really know who these people are because I never saw Scooby-Doo, but whatever.
I think that Angel would be the bad guy that they catch and then they take off the mask and they're like, oh, it's just
would have
Angel.
Gotten away with it if it wasn't those meddling kids.
Yeah.
Actually, I think that's Spike.
Yeah, that would be Spike. Context.
Yeah. And Mitch also asks the very pertinent question, why are vampires so fond of trench coats? Is it because they're all in love with Angelus? I think actually we got an answer to this question in the season 2 episode, Lie to Me. I cannot believe I just pulled that out of my ass. Oh my God, I know this show too well. When they walk into the vampire worshipping cult and Angel is like standing next to a guy that's wearing the exact same outfit that he is wearing. I think that's just the allure of the darkness.
Plus, like, Spike, when he runs out of the house this time, like, it's easy for them to pull the trench coat over their whole body so they don't fry in
that's
the sun
true
if
too.
They ever catch themselves in sunlight.
Yeah. Spike's certainly got a, you know, he's got a specific aesthetic of, like, you know, 80s rock kind of metal look, which is a specific kind of trench coat. Angel's long coat is somewhat different. There's many breeds of long coat, but yeah, I don't know. It's because it's edgy and it was the 90s. That's about
it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, good point. Yeah. yes, it's not as off a question as I thought it was, actually, on closer thought. So another scene that I really loved, which is in Xander's basement when they're all on the run from the initiative and all they can do is go from Giles' house to Xander's house, which, first of all, is really funny. But it's also just nice to see them all, like the girls are all sleeping in Xander's bed and Giles is sleeping in like the giant inflatable chair and stuff, and I really love that, and I know that that's someone's favorite scene, so I won't go too much into it, but these kinds of scenes of the gang, I just live for this. I think it's so great.
I feel Giles so much in this scene. The older I get, the more I'm just, every scene Giles is in, I'm like, I am you.
I am Giles.
Yeah.
For sure, yeah. And, you know, is this the second time they've watched The Roadrunner? Didn't they also watch that when all the kids were slaughtered at the high school that one time?
Oh, my God.
Those kids were watching it and they found the bodies.
Yeah. It's very interesting that this kind of, I feel like it goes, like it happens, I might be messing it up with another show, but I feel like it happens one more time and it's like really, really creepy. Adam kills a kid. We kind of talked about that a little bit. I guess we can talk about Adam, though, because this is really, I mean, we saw him end the episode, last episode, which, by the way, I loved. I'm always going to love that shocker when she's like, you know, they have no idea what's coming. She just dies. So Adam is here. He is this hybrid demon human robot thing. And the first thing he does when he, you know, is quote unquote born into the light is he kills a kid and he's like having an identity crisis. And I was wondering what you guys thought about this. It was very, I mean, we've never actually seen kids die on Buffy before. Or I guess we didn't see him die, but you know, like all the other times it's been like fake outs. Like the kids have never actually been harmed. So this is kind of a dark turn, I think.
Those kids weren't harmed by the gingerbread person?
No, because that was they were not real kids. They were, that was just the demon.
Oh, right.
The thing about Adam that I find really interesting, and I was watching it this week and I was like, is he's doing stuff that's very evil. But is he intrinsically evil, or is he like a quote unquote innocent, or like is he aware of what he's obviously not aware or has no conscious, you know, or conscience or anything like that? Like, so what exactly is going on? Like, yes, he went out and he did something horrific, and I'm not saying he's like, oh, a sad victim like Frankenstein's monster who really is like a tragic figure or something like that. But there's definitely something there that makes this not necessarily evil, if you know what I mean. Like, it's an evil deed, but it's not, he's not like a malicious, you know, kind of
thing. He didn't murder the kid to, like, aha, I am evil and I will murder a child. Like,
he doesn't even know what it means, I think.
And he says, like, he was looking, like, he dissected the kid basically, so he's trying to figure out how things work, which it's really disturbing, but at the same time there's this weird innocence. I hate to use that word.
I used it as well, when I was talking to Leo about it, I was like, I don't want to say innocence, but I feel like that he's so got that, an element of that in a kind of really creepy way.
Yeah, because his motive is not at that point to do evil. It's to understand, but he goes about it in a way that to us is evil.
Yeah, I think he has a very scientific mind because obviously he was created by a scientist, and so he wants to explore and understand, and I don't even think he would have killed the kid had he not pointed out to that thing on his arm and said, what's that for? And then, like, that part of whatever demon composition took over and was like, oh, right, this is for me to use against other people, and I don't really know why I have to use it against other people, but this is its purpose. And then, you know, from there you could dissect a body because, well, now you have a cadaver, so why not explore?
Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of things about Adam. Like, it's funny you brought up Frankenstein's monster, Natalie, because that's like one of the things that have always sort of, I mean, Adam is clearly like Frankenstein's monster plus demon, you know, like he is, yeah. it's a ripoff of Frankenstein's monster. And there. Right. I think it's like more than influence. I think it's like, basically that's the monster and they're not even trying to hide the comparison. And that always sort of struck me as a little like, oh, okay, well, you know, whatever. But what I do think is so interesting, and it's actually one of the ways in which I think the Buffy and Angel episodes this week sort of parallel each other a little bit, is that it's just kind of going back again to the Spike discussion. And the thing that especially me and Natalie seem to keep coming back to in our discussions of the show is that it's all about what is evil, what is good, what is human, what is demon, what is right,
what is, mm-hmm, yeah, what's what is personhood.
Exactly. Yeah. And how, you know, you can't say good and evil, even though the characters keep trying to separate them to make their own moral decisions easier. There's always going to be all these shades of all these different colors, and you can never, and Adam is just another example of that. You know, he's composed of all the different parts. What he does is horrific and quote unquote evil, but it doesn't necessarily make him evil, because his nature, as Caitlin said at this point, is not to be evil and to do things for sadistic pleasure. He has the mind of a scientist, and he wants to know how he works and how everything works and how the world works. And I think it's interesting. And I think it just adds to the discussion that Buffy sort of encourages, I think, in these kinds of ways. But I mean, sort of, unless anyone else has anything else to add about Adam, and I guess we'll get back to the nature of evil in our Angel discussion. So moving on from Adam to Tara, which Mitch also wants to talk about. This is, like, by the way, a direct quote. I'm the one saying this is not my opinion. He asks what her purpose is. He says, at first I liked her and her cool hair, but now I find her ridiculously annoying. She just kind of blandly sits there staring at Willow with googly eyes, being boring and useless. So this is Mitch's opinion on Tara at this point in the show. Brittany, how are you feeling about Tara at this point?
I feel kind of bad for Tara, because I think she just wants a friend, and if everything is so easy for her and Willow, like, you know, doing these spells and whatnot, then Willow is only going to see her as a person to go to get something done and not, like, you know, hang out and work on the craft and figure things out together. And so I felt really bad for her when she felt the need to just, you know, like, you know, not participate in the spell because she didn't want it to work and she just wants to have this friend. Because as we saw when she was in that group of people, no one wanted to listen to her, no one wanted to help her, and she's very lonely. And to have Willow come and hang out with her, I think that's a big deal for her. So I am a little confused as to what her purpose is right now, but I don't find her annoying yet. I just kind of feel bad for her.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you noticed her not participating in the spell, because I thought that Mitch would put something in the doc about it, and he didn't.
Right, so, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. She's definitely got issues. Like, she's very shy. Like, something is making her very, you know, insecure, like in the group and everything like that. And Willow's pretty pushy with her. Like, I don't know. It's a bit of an odd dynamic at the moment, I will admit.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's always the thing that I've always had with Tara. Seeing her in the scene sort of just kind of reminds me of that, is that my only sort of real regret with her is that they didn't allow Amber Benson to be more Amber Benson-y than this. Because I think it's a thing with Tara, seeing the way she's acting, seeing the way she's looking, and I think that there is a bit of awkwardness there that is not like the kind of awkwardness they were going for with her, and it does make these kind of scenes like a bit a little bit sort of hard to watch for that reason, because Amber Benson is not this kind of like personality, and I think it shows, and it's sort of a bit unfortunate. But I think Tara, as she is and as she's being set up in the show, she's very relatable. That shyness and that sort of not really knowing what to say and awkward pauses and just kind of staring too long and not being sure where to look and stuff. I think we can all sort of relate to that awkwardness a little bit. At least I know I can.
I'm glad you brought up the fact that this doesn't really like vibe with Amber Benson's personality, because I've seen her speak on a couple of panels like for writing, and she is so lively and bubbly, and whenever they introduce her, they say that she was on Buffy, so I knew that she was coming eventually, and then to see this person, I'm like, that's not Amber Benson, and I don't know Amber Benson that well, but I've seen her like two or three times, and she's not like that in person, so she's doing a really great job acting because she's containing a lot of Amber Benson.
She's an actress, you know, like...
Yeah, you don't...
It is her job to not be herself.
But if you see David Boreanaz across different roles and, like, doing interviews and being, like, that goofball at the end, you see that in Angel. And, like, you see, like, Sarah Michelle Gellar in Buffy and from the very few carefully screened interviews I see of Giles outside of the role, they bring a little bit of themselves to it. I don't know if it's better or worse.
Like, I think if someone is unrecognizable in a role, is that better or worse than like, oh, that's definitely, you know, that's a David Boreanaz thing, you know, like,
I think on a show like Buffy, I think what happens with the characters that for me is makes the show so special is that they kind of come alive, like the characters and the actors sort of, they merge and they take stuff from each other and they sort of become one for this show, kind of like the actor, like, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but the characters just feel so real. And I think when you have to, like, not in any way like throwing shade at Amber Benson, but I think when you have her be something that she's so clearly not, and you can tell by watching the character, that's not necessarily to say that she had to act exactly like she was, but when you can see that it's not what she would do in that situation, that kind of sends a weird, it makes it a little bit of a weird watch, I think, compared to everyone else who seems so seamlessly themselves, even though they are playing characters. But
this is early for her. So yeah, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen, but
Or if she's even going to be around, you know, for very long. So like, we have no idea.
Although I will say the actress playing Amy is doing a great job of disappearing into the role of Rat. I'm very impressed with her acting abilities.
She's the best actor on the show.
She is barely recognizable. When she's a human, I'm like, who are you? I only recognize you as your role as Rat.
Yeah, I agree. And Emmy for Amy the Rat, for sure. But Mitch also has a theory about, like, he says Willow is going to be evil and she's going to use Tara as a sacrificial lamb, siphoning out her magic for herself in order to reach her full potential, blah, 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 blah. There you go. That's the doc.
Everyone is so hung up on Willow being evil, and I want it to happen, but I don't think it's going to be, like, Willow versus everyone for the rest of Buffy. Like, I want a spell to go wrong, and then, like, Willow is actually evil, but only for a little while. It would be fun. But I feel like all the other newbies are like, she's turning evil, and that's the show. It's going to be so good.
She's definitely got, like, I think that comes from the idea that she's so, like, kind of, like, used to being, you know, quiet and repressed, and as soon as she starts getting this bit of power, like with this, she kind of comes across a bit like snippier, and it's like she seems to have a lot of like mean opinions inside her that are kind of, she feels more confident about expressing now that she's got like a bit of power and like a bit more confidence about herself. So maybe it's because of that. Maybe it's because like that she's like kind of coming across a bit harsher than she was originally, and they think that's going to keep snowballing or something.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think we definitely see that, especially in the way she's talking, you know, about Anya. She's being a little bit snarky about Anya, and she's sort of speaking her mind a little bit more. And we obviously saw it a lot in Something Blue when all of her negative opinions about the group are making themselves known. And all of the things she had with Buffy last episode of feeling left out of her life. I think it's just a more confident, more assertive Willow that we're seeing sort of. Yeah. And we're seeing the same with Buffy, too, like the way that she has a lot of power. And every once in a while, you see her sort of having to rein it in a little bit because, yeah. you know, when you have power, you can also have power over other people. And I think that's what Willow has really learned the hard way this season up until this point. She's made mistakes. You know, she's been, quote unquote, darkness already.
Yeah, with Willow, she does kind of keep trying to kind of find magical solutions to mm-hmm. problems a lot quicker. Like it's kind of her go-to thing now, which, you know, has gotten out of hand already, I suppose, in some circumstances, like when stuff's gone wrong, like with something blue and stuff like that.
And speaking of people finding their darkness, I mean, Riley had a very, very dark episode. And even I will say, if there's any character that I am worried about, quote unquote, turning to the dark side, it would be him. Because I think even though you can explain everything he did in this episode, you know, threatening that old lady with a gun and pushing Willow out of the way, like very forcibly with the fact that he was on like suddenly he was on some medication that we had no idea about before. And suddenly he wasn't taking his meds anymore after like a day. And like, I think you can explain all that away, but it's still like the way he was acting. Like I even said on Twitter, it's moments like this that make it a little bit hard for me to like Riley because I don't like this side of him. Even though maybe that's an unfair opinion of me because he couldn't really help himself.
It's a withdrawal. It's an addiction withdrawal, clearly, and it, you know, clearly they were getting something like amphetamines or like adrenaline. I don't know, like something. It had to be something like that, right? Like it had to be some sort of like really crazy enhancing medication or drug or whatever that they were putting into the food, as we discovered. And clearly the aftershock of that, and it was, you know, certainly I don't think it was natural for him. I think it was like crazy panic attack or like hits of adrenaline, like in the wrong place and stuff like that. Like it had to be something like that. It was pretty harsh, yeah, but. I'm not sure.
I don't know. I don't like seeing that. And I know we don't really know these characters very well, but it still makes me very sad to see him sort of also fall out with Forrest because you get the sense that they're really good friends and stuff like that. And him sort of actively taking Buffy's side, even though we are on Buffy's side, it is sort of a little bit strange.
Forrest has been pretty extreme the last couple of episodes in his kind of reactions, though. Yeah. He's gone 0 to 60 in his harshness and kind of his aggressive language and aggressive behavior and, yeah, let's kill her and being very mean and violent. So, I don't know, that was quite shocking to see him go like that. Presumably he is not on withdrawal and that's just his personality or something. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about Riley at this point, Caitlin and Brittany?
I find Riley at this point interesting because, you know, you see so much in the media of, like, the bro code, and Riley is so clearly the opposite of that. Like, he's not doing the, like, bros before hoes stupid thing. Like, he's trying to be logical and realizes, like, Buffy has a point. So I think that's interesting to see him kind of siding with her while he's, like, mentally capable of doing so, while still trying to maintain those relationships that are important to him. But those other people, like Forrest, are so indoctrinated with what the initiative has been teaching that they can't get out of it. So it's very interesting. And I think that says a lot about Riley, that he does have that ability to do some critical thinking about things that are, you know, maybe aren't adding up when it's starting to, like, he starts getting evidence. So he's able to do some critical thinking, even though he's very much the soldier type. And we don't typically think of the soldier type as breaking ranks. And that's literally what he's doing, which I find interesting. And I think it does say a lot about him.
And on an emotional level, I mean, I'm not that surprised he was finding it hard to fathom Maggie doing that. You know, like, I'm not that surprised he was really not willing to just immediately side with Buffy, or immediately, or even when he started going off the meds, like, when he was uncertain, you know, when everything was shaken up for him, I'm not that surprised that he's kind of panic and all of that kind of stuff was, you know, reacting back to this woman that he'd been, like, loyal to and worked with for so long. Like, I'm kind of not that shocked that he had that kind of uncertainty, because it's a really weird and horrible thing to have to realize to someone, because presumably he's been with her for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm. When Adam told Riley that they were brothers, what did you sort of make of that, Brittany or anyone else?
Well, Riley was already, you know, freaking out at this point. And for Adam to say that, I think it sort of made sense in the way that Walsh was building Adam, because she was trying to make all of those people, as evidenced by the fact that she was actively drugging them for however many years, she was trying to make all of them feel like one unit, and you had to get Adam in there to say that. And she was using familial terms with Adam, because the fact that he called Walsh mother, it would make sense that then everyone else would be brothers, and she's the parent figure, and that's the way she was trying to program Adam. And for Riley to see that, like, okay, this woman was insane and is trying to make me, like, you know, one of the people that, like, connected to one of the people that we've been trying to actively stop and kill and study, that wouldn't sit well with me either, to be like, okay, we're taking these people in and we're chopping them up and we're figuring out what makes them tick, and then you're going to try and introduce someone to be a member of, like, a weird family with me and he's already, like, going crazy because he's coming down from all this medication. It made perfect sense that he freaked out.
Mm-hmm. When I watched this for the first time, I remember my English wasn't really very good and I was struggling to understand everything that was going on. And I actually thought, like, I took it very literally. I thought that this was like a reveal that Riley had been made by Walsh.
Oh my God.
Like, obviously,
God.
Like, they explained. Awesome. Right? But that's the thing. I know,
like, an android who didn't know he was an android.
Exactly.
Exactly.
That would have been a good twist.
And yeah. But the thing is that, like, I saw that, and I know, you know, watching the episode now, and he's like, oh, yeah, you have a birth mother, blah, blah, blah. Like, all that went over my head. So I was just like, oh, my God. And I was like, so that's why he's so perfect. And Buffy thinks she has this normal, perfect boyfriend, but it was like he was made, like, by Walsh all along. And I was like,
I wish for this the next, true. Like, can we just, like,
right? It's so much better. And then for the next three episodes, I was like, oh my God. And then, like, slowly I was like, wait, this is not where the show is going. And, like, what is happening? And I was so disappointed. So sorry, Riley, but I thought you were way cooler than you actually are. Like, how cool of a plot twist would that have been? That she was actually dating, like, a monster, quote unquote, all along again. And she thought he was perfect.
It probably would have been easier to forget the fact that he just, like, grabbed her and forcibly, like, was really angry at her in the bar.
Right.
Well, she wouldn't have been the first one in her family to date a robot.
That's very
that's
true.
Oh, my gosh. Nice callback. Wow. So anyway, yeah, that's what happens when you watch, like, a show and you don't really understand. You make up your own plot, and sometimes it's better than the actual plot. So Riley, sort of at the end of the episode, he's sort of like, Buffy kind of loses him. He goes off to a military hospital to be quote unquote reprogrammed, again going into the robot alternate plot that was going on in my head. Mm-hmm. And you know, here's a question: what will happen when we see him again, if we see him again? You know, Buffy is obviously very upset at the end that she sort of let them take him away. And what do you think, Brittany, as our sole newbie?
Well, I'm actually kind of glad that we saw Buffy, like, let him go and realize that she can't fix everything, and this is a problem that's bigger than her and her good attitude about, you know, if we just believe that people who are going crazy can be fixed by me staring at them lovingly. So I'm glad that she sort of gave over that power, and I'm hoping that if he does come back, we deal with the ramifications of, like, her seeing someone cast in a different light, because we didn't really have that with Angelus. When Angel came back, it was like, oh, it's Angel, it's Angel, it's Angel, and not, oh, not that crazy demon who slaughtered Miss Calendar, and I can still be comfortable hanging out with you. So I'm hoping that she does feel a little bit of distance between them, if that's saying if he does come back, I don't know.
And the last point in the doc here is that Spike gets beat up by demons. I really don't know what to do with that.
It was so sad. He's just trying. Yeah. He's trying so hard. And his television got smashed by the people in the initiative. When he, like, sits up and he looks so sad. I'm like, oh, that's all this guy has is his stories. And now he doesn't have them. Guess he's got to go back to Giles.
How he wired the television in the crypt, not that it really matters.
I thought about that too.
There's no electricity for your little fridge with your blood and stuff, so clearly he's got a line in from somewhere, but
He's stealing electricity. He really is evil.
Stealing electricity and cable. Nothing worse than that.
No, I know, but I guess that is kind of a point to be made, is that we've seen Spike sort of, like, he wants to be violent, and he honestly doesn't seem to really care if he's violent against humans or demons, and now we're seeing him sort of actively be rejected from the demon community, because they're saying, well, if you're against, you can't be with us if you're against us, so what's he going to do now, I guess, is the question.
Yeah, he has no place anymore.
No. Ah, so interesting. But if no one else has any points to make about this episode, let's move into our favorite scenes. And Caitlin, if you go first, since that's sort of related.
So mine was when Buffy goes to Willy's, just because I find this whole demon bar thing kind of fascinating, especially because we've got the whole thing where we've talked about Angel is working very hard to show the gray areas of demons and humans, and, you know, demons aren't all evil necessarily, and humans aren't all good necessarily. So we see kind of just a place where demons are just, like, hanging out and eating chicken fingers, which is kind of amazing. And I like seeing these gray areas, because I feel like we see them less with the demons in Buffy than we do in Angel. So when we get these moments of just seeing that, like, demons are people too, sort of, like, I like it. And also Willy is just hilarious. Like, when Buffy, he's like, you gotta punch me, and then he freaks out before she even touches him.
I know.
It's all great.
I totally forgot about this scene. Like, I forgot this was a part of the episode. So I was very, very happy to see Willy again. I think that's always kind of like a treat when we get to see that bar. And Natalie and Brittany, yours sort of feeds into Natalie. So why don't you go and then Natalie can go.
Yeah, so mine was the specific moment in the morning after they wake up scene when Giles comes out and he's just like, yeah, I slept on a beach ball.
Mine was in general, just that whole basement sleepover, you know, all the girls, you know, in the sofa bed and, you know, everyone having to hang out and sleep over in Xander's basement. It was just cute and natural and just, it was great. And everyone was great and funny. And
classic Scooby moment. And and mine was a scene that we didn't talk about at all in the discussion, which was Buffy and Xander going undercover at the military base. First of all, ridiculous that Buffy would somehow think that Clark Kent glasses would not mean that she wouldn't be recognized, even though presumably they would all know exactly what she looked like. But I also just really enjoy whenever we get to see, you know, Buffy and Xander hang out in these situations, and it was fun to sort of, again, he still has a little bit of that military knowledge sort of crawling around in his brain, and it's not something that we get to see a lot of, but every once in a while it does show itself. And I don't know, I just thought it was a good scene. I always remember it as being a nice moment of levity in an episode that really is quite heavy, I think. Mm-hmm. And for favorite lines, Caitlin, what was yours?
So mine was after they find out about the dead child, and Buffy thinks it's the Pulgar demon, and she gets up really serious. And says, when I find it, I'm going to make him pay for taking that kid's life. I'll make him die in ways he can't even imagine. And then everyone kind of looks down at what she's wearing and she goes, that probably would have sounded more commanding if I wasn't wearing my yummy sushi pajamas.
Yeah, that was funny. And Brittany, what was yours?
Mine was when they're all watching the Roadrunner cartoons and the, like, big weight comes back up and smashes Wile E. Coyote, and Buffy's like, that would never happen. And then Willow replies, well, no, Buff, that's why they call them cartoons and not documentaries.
I was thinking the same thing. I was like, that's not how physics works.
Yeah. And Natalie?
Mine was in the beginning when Riley comes over to Giles' place, and the actual scene in general was great as well, when they're all kind of like, there's no way they'd come looking for me here, and then, you know, he pops in. But when he kind of looks around the room and he sees Spike there, and he was just like, that's Hostel 17. And Spike reverts back to his fake Xander friend identity from the former episode, where he's like, no, I'm just a friend of Xander's. And he's like, bugger it, I'm your guy. And it wouldn't have been funny if it hadn't been such a perfect, like, yeah, we're still going with that fake lie from before. Right. And it was just very funny to me.
Mm-hmm. I forgot to put one in, but I would just say, I think one of the lines that I laughed at because I'm a child is when Buffy goes, I'm the only one that can pass the retinal scan. And Xander goes, ew, I don't want to see that.
Nice.
And I like it also because, again, it's one of those things that get lost in translation when you watch it with subtitles. So it was like a gem that I got to discover on a later rewatch, and it just made me laugh for way longer than it should have done. So there you go. And that's the end of our discussion of Goodbye, Iowa. And we're going to move over to Angel to talk about I've Got You Under My Skin, which is actually a very interesting, different type of Angel episode that I think is going to be interesting to talk about. So in this episode, Joss Whedon is finally realizing that the best Kate might be no Kate. Instead, Angel's got Wesley on the case, and with the help of Cordelia's terrible brownies, they track the demon down to an evil little boy who is a liar trying to set his house on fire. Meanwhile, there is character development. Angel redeems himself by saving Wesley when he couldn't save Doyle, and we find out that Wesley's dad sucked hard. So yeah, this is an episode, I think this is a very, very interesting alternate take on, again, evil and humanity and what it means to be a quote-unquote good person. And I think the whole point of the episode, that the evil was actually the human boy all along, is a very interesting point for a show about demons to make. And I think it's always been, because in real life, you know, even though this is a fantasy show, it does tackle a lot of real life issues. And I think in real life, we do have kids that legitimately seem like bad people, and the question is, what do you do with that? How do you deal with that? I don't know if you guys have ever been in that situation, but I mean, I certainly have, and I think it hits very close to home when you see an episode of television tackle like legitimate irredeemableness of a human of such a young age. You know, I think it's I don't know what you guys have thought about that.
Well, I like that this sort of plays into this bigger ongoing discussion that we've had about Angel, where Angel tackles the idea that maybe you're not always looking for a demon, or the demons are the ones that need help. In this case, this demon was completely awful on its own, but it came across something that was darker than him, which happened to be a small human boy. And mm-hmm. like, just to see that again reinforced on Angel, where, yeah, you're looking for demons, but sometimes the demons are the ones that need help. And in this case, like, yeah, we killed two birds with one stone by getting the demon and the little boy, but, you know, it was just really interesting to see that this demon who has this, like, thousands and thousands of year-long history inhabiting hosts say that a small little boy was the darkest void, soulless, like, mm-hmm. person that he's ever come across. And that's more terrifying than seeing the great makeup department do their work.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's something that Angel can't fight, you know?
Yeah. Mm.
That there's always, like, going to be evil in humanity, and sometimes it overpowers the good in humanity. And I think, you know, sort of, again, relating it a little bit back to Buffy, you know, talking about how characters like Buffy, like Willow, people who have power that isn't, like, that is a little bit supernatural in nature, they sort of have to contend with that and with sort of maintaining, you know, their morality, obviously. And for them, it's fine. They're obviously, they're not this kid, but they are dealing with something similar. And then in Angel, that, you know, you go to this extreme where you go, sometimes there is more bad than good, and sometimes there is nothing but bad inside a human. And I'm not saying that's necessarily how it is in reality, but it definitely lends itself to some real world discussion, for sure, or identification, I guess. And I think the little kid is probably one of the most terrifying things that the show has sort of shown us so far.
And just like, seeing, for that reason, like, the, like, human reaction of the father saying, like, I literally did everything that I could to protect him, but yeah, there was no protecting him or yeah, my family. And that's, like, yeah, that's horrible to see, but it's so true that, like, you can do everything and think you're doing the right thing, but really there's something that you just can't help.
Mm-hmm.
And the beginning of the episode, like, framed the father as, I know that was kind of set up of, like, trying to assume the father's the demon or whatever, but the beginning of the episode, you know, framed the father as really cold and horrible and potentially abusive and stuff like that. And then you got that, like, full 180 as soon as Angel, like, offered him a lifeline of, hey, like, there's something wrong here that we can fix, which was interesting to me as well, about, like, what was really, you know, what was going on with the dad and what the dad had been trying to mm-hmm. do. And for how long and all that kind of stuff. So
for sure, yeah. And it's like that's the great thing about this episode too, is that it's like a triple twist, because, you know, usually in episodes like this, you'll have like, oh, well, here's the obvious problem, but it's really this other problem. So once, you know,
yeah, so
it was
we
like, oh, the dad,
like,
isn't the demon, but yeah, the kid is the demon.
Kid, and then yeah, not the demon, at the actual kid.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think that's very, very clever.
And then I thought the little girl was the demon because they locked her up. And I was like, oh, they're doing that for her own good because she'll try to kill everyone. And then I thought that the little boy was running away because, you know, he was just afraid and he was wandering. He wasn't actually, like, you know, possessed or anything. I don't know why it took me so long to realize it was the boy. Like, I literally did not realize it until mm-hmm. he physically changed, because I thought the girl took the bite of the brownie and didn't like it, not because it was Cordelia's cooking, but because she was
just
like,
they sucked it. Like,
yeah,
the brownie.
But I thought it was because she was like, you know, she sensed that there was something in the brownie.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like, I had to literally wait until the boy physically had a reaction to the brownie to figure it out.
So funny. That's awesome, though. I really like that. But that's another sort of interesting thread that's going on in this episode, obviously, is, you know, Cordelia is making brownies. They're all hanging out. The gang is really coming together now. But
it's
Angel,
so cute. I just have to say it every time. They're so cute, especially how, and I don't really like comparing, like, Angel and how he treated Buffy to Cordy, because it's not necessarily romance and it's a different kind of thing and all of that kind of stuff. But, oh my God, the way he acts with her and the way he just kind of, like, sits there and laughs at her, and she's so good for him to be around, and it's so cute. And I just die every day over it. Every time I watch, I'm just so overwhelmed by how cute they are and how much he smiles and how, like, he's, like, just, you know, just taking life a little bit easier. And, you know, because no matter how much he loved Buffy, it was, like, drama all the time. And this is just so nice for him. And it's so cute. And I love it. And she loves him, and they're all cute, and, like, I just, they're very sweet, and I just love it so much.
I 1,000% agree, obviously. Like, I think this is one of the best things ever, and it almost, like, I mean, obviously, it's not a coincidence, you know, that they're looking at how, okay, well, this is how Angel was with Buffy. Now he's with a totally different kind of person, and not even just Cordelia, but also Wesley, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
And what that brings out in him is so remarkably different.
It's healthy. Like, it is healthier than how he is with Buffy.
Yeah.
Sorry, like, because, yes, great doomed love, and maybe if he had just that, he'd be, like, satisfied in a different way. But this is so much healthier than any of his life has been before, and it's just, I don't know why he couldn't be this casual with, like, Buffy and the friends in when he lived in Sunnydale.
Yeah, but it's also, you know, they didn't like him, you know, Xander hated him, and Giles didn't trust him, and, you know, Buffy, Buffy was a different person now, that gets as well. Like, Buffy is growing on her own show. She's not the same type of sort of all life or death, you know, true love and eternal heartbreak. Like, she was very extreme in the early seasons, and she's definitely mellowed out a lot now. And but anyway, like Angel said, definitely loving this little trio. But obviously,
imagine Angel hanging out with the gang in the way that Spike's currently hanging out with the gang, like casually hanging out. Like,
yeah.
I'm just trying to imagine that, and I don't think I can, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so weird.
I mean, the only thing we kind of did see it with is when he came back for Pangs, and he did sort of, you know, he hung out, quote-unquote, with Giles a little bit, and they were all speaking casually and normally and standing there with their arms crossed. Like, you know, it was a different vibe, definitely, now that he's not, like, actively threatening the safety of Buffy and vice versa. Like, I think that would definitely be interesting to see. You're right. I think as much as you can, like, love Buffy and Angel together, like, seeing them apart, it's like, it definitely benefits Angel's personality for sure. I think both.
I think it helps to keep in mind that Angel, like, when he started on Buffy, was just coming off of, like, living off of rats and alleys. Right. Yeah. Like, he was like this is a weird comparison, but he was like a dog that wasn't socialized properly.
Yeah.
And now he is being properly socialized. So like, I like the idea, like, everyone knows I'm the big Angel shipper, but I like the idea of him and Buffy apart for a while, growing into themselves and then finding each other again later, once they've kind of grown into
and
themselves.
Her being like, oh, you know how to make pancakes? Who knew? You know?
Yeah, exactly. Them, like, speaking together like normal people, which is what, you know, Cordelia sort of forces Angels to do. And Angel, in turn, is forcing Wesley to do, I will say, you know, trying to normalize him a little bit and make him a part of the group. We did sort of have a little bit of a setback this week, obviously, when in what is, you know, spoiler alert, my favorite line, because it comes so out of nowhere and it's such a wonderful acknowledgement, when Angel calls Wesley Doyle and sort of ends, because that is like an acknowledgement of the fact that Wesley is literally stepping into Doyle's place on the show and filling his role. And for as much as Wesley is a very different person than Doyle, he is also replacing Doyle, and not only for the viewers, but obviously also for Angel and Cordelia. And I love it. I love the acknowledgement of that. And I love the ensuing conversation between Angel and Cordelia. Even though it's interrupted by a vision, it's still, you know, very nice to see them talking about that and acknowledging. And again, Cordy forcing him to talk about his feelings.
Like, let's talk about this. Oh my God, it's so good.
For sure, yeah. And even, I mean, with Doyle, and I know we talked about this when Doyle died, and we were talking about whether, you know, he would ever come back and anything like that. And I think it was hearing his voice in this episode, even though it wasn't him coming back, I still think was sort of very emotional. I don't know how you guys felt about that.
I didn't notice that.
You didn't notice? No.
I cannot discern accents, apparently, because as soon as you said that, I was like, that makes so much more sense as to why that was meaningful.
Oh, no. Yeah, well, there you go.
And I even watched that scene, that whole scene twice, because I really enjoyed it and I liked watching Wesley in that moment. And then I didn't get that.
Okay, well, there you go.
It was so brief.
Let's. What should we talk about? I mean, speaking of Wesley, I guess, you know, when they're performing the exorcism on the kid, Wesley wants to do it because obviously, I mean, Angel, well, he ends up doing it, but he can't do it because he's a vampire and everything. And we find out a little bit about Wesley's backstory, specifically that his dad made him live under a cupboard, Harry Potter style, and that he apparently wasn't a very nice person at all. And that Wesley sort of has his own demons to deal with in that sense. And I don't know what you guys thought about that.
I really liked the fact that when they were looking for the priest before this happened, that Wesley was like, well, there's no other option. I'm going to do it. And he is really gung-ho about stepping into these roles that he, like, you know, even he himself, as we saw during the exorcism, doesn't really believe that he can do. But it doesn't stop him from trying at all, which I really like. And when they were doing that, when he was trying to do the exorcism, and you had that voice that was like, you couldn't even be a member of the council, and like they didn't want you, and his father was disappointed in him, and like you can't even read Latin, and just like seeing mm-hmm. all of that come to a head, but it doesn't deter Wesley. Like, now you know what his inner monologue is, but he's still willing to step up to the plate and be like, well, I'll do it because we don't have any other options right now, and someone is in trouble. And it wasn't mm-hmm. so much like, I want to be a part of your group and that's why I'm doing it. It was, someone's in immediate danger and I can fix it or try to fix
it. That's a good point, yeah. By the way, I don't know about you, Natalie, but I always, after watching Supernatural, I find it really hard to hear Spiritism and this blah, 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 like come out of someone else's mouth.
Mm-hmm. Is it the same exorcist?
It is.
Exorcism,
yeah, it is.
Exactly? Is it like...
At least those words are the same.
Caitlin, here's what I want to know. Okay. Why do all of these demons subscribe to the Judeo-Christian pantheon? Like, why does this work on them, if you know what I mean? Like, I don't get it. Like, they're clearly not in any way connected to
religion. I mean, it's a good question. It's a good question. I think it's sort of, I mean, there's very deep ways you could go into this.
Mm-hmm. In this one especially, because they're all like Satan. They keep being like, you know, and I'm like, In Supernatural, yes, they have, you know, the mythology there, they certainly discover is a semblance of that with, you know, hell and heaven and, you know, whether it's not quite what we've got in the Bible and the religious books, it's certainly the basis of the mythology. Whereas this is not that. So why? And yet, like, religious symbols work on it. One thing I always really loved is that it's actually in, if you ever saw the British version of Being Human, which, Selena, mm-hmm. I'm sure you did, but I'm mm-hmm. not sure about the others, is that it's kind of the intent of the religious symbol and what that, like, yeah. belief means for human. Because George, who's a werewolf in it, Russell Tovey, he's Jewish and he wears a Jewish star, and his Jewish star, like the Star of David, works on vampires, if you know what I mean, even though it's not a Christian cross, but it's because it's the religious iconography and the intent of it. So I don't know. I don't know why a Christian exorcism works on a demon that is in no way tied to, you know, the Christian hell or the Christian Lucifer.
I mean,
so
it's funny that you bring this up, because there is an upcoming episode of Buffy that sort of asks the same question. That's not really a spoiler, because it's, you know.
Which episode?
Like, very, very soon upcoming episode of Buffy.
Really? I'm thinking of a different one where there's an appearance from a demon which left a few question marks about whether it was
okay.
the devil.
Right. Well, no, it's not
which
that
I'm
one.
Sure
it's
you like, know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's but, not like yeah. a plot point specifically. It's just like they literally sort of confront the mythology of the show, and they're just like, why is it actually like this? But it's a very good question, and I think it just sort of, you kind of answered it, and that it's the meaning of the symbols. You know, we kind of, in that episode when we had Willow nailing a crucifix on her wall, she was like, oh, this is awkward because, you know, I'm Jewish. But I think it is more like, rather than it being specifically a, you know, a Christianity thing, it is a symbolic thing.
like, we believe this is pure, yeah. So it works or whatever.
So it's like the thing that and you know what came first, the demons or the faith, and how are they connected, and how does the show, you know, I think it very intentionally avoids answering those questions directly because you could end up offending a lot of people. But no, I mean, it is something that's a good question to ask, and it's worth sort of questioning because, as you said, unlike Supernatural, this show isn't sort of going to introduce, spoiler alert, we're not going to be introducing God and stuff. So
hell, like, there's a hell mouth and hell dimensions, but it's not
there are
the Christian idea of sin and hell and that kind of, and a demon isn't like that kind of thing. Like,
yeah, and that's like, there are hells and there are gods and there are the powers that be and there are these forces. And I think the cross and the Spiritus Mundus exorcism and all of those things are just sort of extensions of spirituality as it is presented in Buffy.
Well, doesn't Wesley say at one point, like, this demon specifically responds to Latin? Like,
it also could, and it's more the Latin than it is the specific religion, you know?
I have a memory of, like, him and Angel looking through the books and being like, this demon's whatever.
Yeah, the standard, I've got the transcript. The standard Latin seems to be the ritual of choice for an Aethros. I mean, okay, I guess,
So it's specific to the demon, too. Mm-hmm. And the nun also refers to the demon. And can we just appreciate that nun?
Oh, my God. She was awesome. Scene was amazing. Why didn't they get her to come in and do it?
I know. That's a good question.
You know?
Sexism. Oh, well. No, I'm kidding.
You know, like, if it had to be, like, Wesley or a dead priest, you know, isn't a nun better than a Wesley? Like, I don't understand. But anyway.
Yeah. But yeah, no, you're right. It's a good point. Interesting discussion for sure. And Angel, of course, gets to save Wesley where he couldn't save Doyle, which is also a very interesting parallel and sort of shows a lot of growth on that part and sort of helps to separate Wesley from Doyle or to sort of acknowledge that one does not invalidate or erase the other. You know, you can have Doyle and acknowledge his sacrifice and his influence on these characters, but you can also say, well, now Wesley is here and Wesley is serving a different purpose. And then comes the twist that the little boy turns out to be the psychopath, which again, I will say again, I think this is a very, very good twist on the story and a very good way of blurring the lines between good and evil and having this this real world connection, you know. Basically, it was like the twist. The twist was so powerful because it wasn't a supernatural twist; it was a human twist. It was kind of like when all the supernatural stuff has been said and done, the real evil was actually the stuff that exists in the real world, like whatever you can imagine that the fantasies that these shows cook up for the good guys to fight. What is actually the scariest is what can happen in the real world, because there is no rhyme or reason for that evil. It cannot be exercised. It cannot be explained. It can't be fought and killed, you know, in a, like, hero save the day, blah, blah, blah. Again, sort of similar, I'm going to call back again to the episode Lie to Me, where it turned out that the real sort of tragedy of Ford was that his death could not be prevented by a spell or by anything like that, because it was a real human thing that you couldn't protect yourself from.
Yeah, and we were talking last week about that group of, like, women who were, like, you know, the things that made them people were, like, ripped out of them, and we can relate that all we want to real world issues and, like, female castration and all that stuff, but at the end of the day, we're seeing it through demons, but then this, then, like, we made all those comparisons, but then this completely rips that away and says, like, okay, but now how are you going to respond when it really is a human issue? So we've gotten, like, so comfortable with the fact that we're watching all of these real world issues through demons and, like, well, how are we responding? Oh, well, it's entertainment. And, like, yeah, we can talk about how it relates to real world stuff, but now it is a real world thing. So it's forcing you to, like, really look at it in a way.
Yeah. And then Kate comes, you know, speaking of the real world, you know, the actual cop, Kate, comes back to take the kid away. And this is the first time we've seen her in a while, isn't it? Like, yeah. When was she last on?
Since the baby Jeremy Renner episode,
I think. Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. What a time that was.
But yeah, no, I mean, what is it? I mean, I guess Mitch sort of made his opinion about Kate perfectly clear. Do we have any rebuttals to that?
Yes, I think she's fine. I think it's really good that there is someone in the police, you know, that can be on Angel's side, like above the law. Obviously, you know, my big show that we podcast for is Teen Wolf, and they have like the sheriff of that town is obviously the father of one of the kids, and he's in on it. And so he's able to, you know, cover stuff up, or he has the resources to look in like official files. I think it's really good that they have someone in law enforcement on their side, even if she's still kind of adjusting to Angel being a vampire. And I like her. I don't think there's anything wrong with her. I think it's good that they were able to call in someone like, you know, obviously Angel can explain to her on the download here, this is what's going on with this kid, as opposed to it just being like, you know, someone not having anything in the know, and they're therefore, you know, able to subtly kind of guide things in a way that's a bit more helpful. I don't know why he has such a problem with Kate. What's the problem? Well, is it because he thinks that Angel's in love with her, and he wants Cordy and Angel to get together? Is that it, or like what is it?
No, the problem with Kate was that, and we still, like, I get what you're saying, Nat, but we're not there yet because Kate doesn't trust him yet, and we're slowly working towards that. We haven't seen any progress in that area yet, and I'm completely in agreement with you. I think that we're going to get there, but we just need to actually have an episode where we deal with the fallout of her finding out about Angel and then them possibly forming this working relationship. But the big problem with Kate before was that we felt, and I agree, felt like we were watching two different shows, and that Kate's purpose sort of killed the Angel vibe that we had. Every time he went to Kate, it was like a break in the episode for another show, like a Law and Order show, where it felt very procedural and very stiff and dry and not fitting into what we were watching and enjoying about Angel, until she finally connected the dots and just felt like it took forever for her to like be let in on the secret. And now that she is, we can work towards having that, you know, that in at the police station for the person we can call up and be like, hey, can you look up this license plate number, or, hey, you know, you want to come and learn more about demons? Come join, like, see what's really going on at night so you have an idea of what to look for. But we're, like, we're just not there yet. So I think that's where the frustration's coming from.
Right. And I think that's, like, that's, again, I think I've said this before, but kind of the same, along the same lines, that Kate just feels like she belongs in a different show. And it is like the CSI vampires, you know, and it's not that she is bad. It's just that she doesn't gel, you know, everything good you were saying about Cordy and Angel and Wesley and that sort of group. And Kate just doesn't fill me with the same kind of joy. I think it's the only sort of issue I have with her.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's fair. Like, I think that's valid, but I also think that it is quite a I think if Angel's going to run around being a private detective as opposed to being like a secret high schooler, if he's actually operating as a private detective, I think that involving the real law enforcement is a necessity. So
agreed.
Yeah, that's true. Is. We just need to get. We need them to like work out whatever it is and figure it out and work her into the show in a better way. Because before it was sort of like, oh, great, you look this up and I'm going to disappear. And so it felt very jarring. Like, we're not exploring that relationship. But now I think we're at a place where, since she was introduced at the end of this episode, maybe we'll be able to unpack it more and finally get to that place where having law enforcement on their side is beneficial, and we're not hiding the fact that Angel's using law enforcement not to catch like serial killers, but to catch serial killing demons.
Right.
Yeah.
So moving on to our favorite scenes now, mine was very simple. He's basically just Angel telling Wesley that, because, you know, the demon sort of tried to goad Angel by saying that Wesley has thought about how he would kill Angel, and Angel just said that it's good that Wesley has a plan. and he knows that he's not trying to kill him. It's kind of like the same as I think he had this discussion with Doyle and Cordelia, at least with Cordelia saying, you know, you have to be willing to do it. And, you know, it's important for him. It's part of the trust, I think, that he knows that if anything happens with his humanity, that they are willing to step in and to save the world from him. And I loved that. I loved him showing that trust in Wesley. And Caitlin, what about you?
So mine was just the whole twist that when they find out that the boy is actually more evil. And I couldn't help but think during this episode, like, it was raising the question for me, why do humans get elevated in their status to be protected above the demons? Because the more we see of demons, especially an angel, like, we're seeing more of the gray area and that some demons need protecting. And it's starting to seem like, you know, maybe demons in that way are like humans, that there are good ones and bad ones. So why are we saying that no humans can be killed, but some demons can be killed? Like, humans in that way seem to be just as bad. So that was sort of raising the question for me, because demons can't help that they're born demons, just like humans have no choice in being born human. So it was an interesting thing that just kind of came up for me.
I really agree, obviously, because this is, you know, been such a big thing. But I think with this kind of circumstance and with Buffy and with the whole we don't kill people, it's not that people are instinctively not evil or not, you know, anything like that. It's not like that all demons are evil. I mean, even though Buffy kind of starts out saying that, like, no human can ever be as evil as any demon, you know. I think it's more that, you know, humans have a system that already exists, law enforcement and all of that kind of stuff, you know, and it's more that, you know, that people like Angel and Buffy exist to protect humans from demons because it's like a secret world. Like, I think that that's the obvious answer there, that it's just humans are as evil as some demons, but it's not their responsibility, you know, they can't just go killing humans that are evil because it's not their responsibility. They're only kind of allowed to be responsible for taking the law into their hands in order to keep stuff secret, maybe. I don't know. I think that that's the only reasonable explanation, because there are certainly plenty of humans within the context of this show that are way grosser than many of the demons.
Yeah, like when Ethan Rain sort of made that point, like, haha, you're a slayer, you can't kill me, and she was like, no, but there are processes for people like you.
Yeah, and now that the government, you know, apparently that the initiative is not even its own faction, it is officially the US military, it's a secret branch of the US military, that's, you know, kind of legal law enforcement, I guess. So yeah,
exactly. And how about you, Natalie?
My favorite scene, besides from all of the bits with Angel and the kids, because he's just so, just can't. The show is a gift. I just can't. Was Cordelia in the magic shop, like getting the box for the like keeping the demon in? Just because her transaction with the guy was so like matter of fact and practical, and I just loved it. Like, I just found it like a really hilarious little scene, but. Angel with the children, even when with the evil child, when at the beginning where he's like, you're not going to cry, are you? Like, to Angel, he's just so cute and adorable, and I love him, and I can't believe how much people think that he is boring. And
no, I know.
He's so good. I don't know. He's so full of life and joy, and I love him.
Anyway. He's finally being socialized.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And Brittany?
My favorite scene was Wesley literally fighting his inner demons while performing the exorcism, because I just thought that was really interesting and gave a whole new layer to Wesley, who so far has sort of just been like the butt of the jokes a little bit, and now he's a little bit more human.
Absolutely. Very, very true. And favorite lines, mine, I've already said it, it was when he went Cordelia Doyle, and it was like awkward. Caitlin, what was yours?
So mine was at the beginning of the episode when Wesley comes in and they're watching Cordelia in the kitchen and Angel says, she's making brownies. And Wesley goes, oh, is that what I smell? And I tracked something in.
Oh, my gosh. And Natalie, yours goes on from there.
Yeah, okay. Well, mine was, first of all, just when he shows up the door and he's like, I made brownies, because I feel like I'm just going to repeat myself over and over if I just keep squealing about him. But the other one, I was when he introduced himself and he was like, oh, Angel Jones. I was like, really? Really, dude? Really? Because, okay, can I just pause for a minute? How does he not have an actual alias that he uses that's normal?
I know.
And secondly, if he is going to incorporate Angel, use it as your last name. Like, use it. Okay, like, so we know Selena and I and Caitlin, you know, if you guys remember, Angel has a first name that he was born with. He's in Ireland before he became Angelus, before he was a vampire. I don't know if the shows ever covered that yet. But why not just go like first name Angel as the surname? Because Angel, it's kind of a weird surname, but it's a weirder first name, at least for a guy. And I feel like that it could still be like viable that you go by your last name. That's what people call you. But Angel Jones, really? Like, really? And I don't know. It just tripped me up and I just found it hysterical. And I totally believe that he's not prepared because he's a dork, but I feel like he should be.
I think that's a good point. I think that's an interesting point, especially because Angel is such a, like, I don't know. I don't know a lot about American names, but I would assume it would be a girl's name mainly.
I think more commonly, yeah.
So it's interesting, but it's nice that he's sort of holding on to it. And he's like, I'm Angel, damn it. And again, after being Angelus, he just goes by Angel. He doesn't go back to his human name, which is also interesting. And Brittany, your favorite line is like a direct, so keeping on the brownies track.
The brownies were just so funny. Mine is when they ask Angel like what his secret is for making the brownies, and he says, I use chocolate. That's why they're brown, which gives them their name, brownies.
Yeah. Oh, Angel. And that brings us to the end of our episode discussion. So moving into contact information now, I see you're furiously typing a thing for Karen to do for you.
I forgot. I know.
But it's a good one. So if you want to email us or contact us with your spoiler-free feedback on these episodes or future episodes, you can do that by emailing rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at re_watchable. You can find this post on hypebull.com. You can find us on Tumblr at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com and iTunes reviews. If you rate us 5 stars, then Karen will make you delicious brownies with or without, you know, stuff to tell you whether you're possessed by a demon. So there you go. Listener
That's
feedback.
The surprise.
Brownie surprise. The listener feedback. We want to start with the result of our poll this week.
All right. So I ran a poll this week incorporating a couple of rewatchable shows that we've done before. And my question was, who would you turn to for advice if you were in a pickle? And 50% of you would choose Giles, which clearly he's our winner. And
of course,
33% chose Uncle Iroh from Avatar. 15% chose Wallace from Veronica Mars. And I am the only person who voted for Jeff Rosso from Freaks and Geeks because I felt bad for him. So with 2% of the vote, you get the guidance counselor from Freaks and Geeks, who would sing you a wonderful song if you were in trouble.
Wow.
So,
well, I think the best part of that show.
He really is.
Well, I think the thing of, you know, Buffy's popularity is probably a factor in this too. But I mean, Giles, let's be real. Giles is the clear winner of this.
I voted for Iroh.
I thought we could back in some of our really strong Avatar fan base. And we did. They got Iroh got 33%, which I thought was a pretty solid performance. And it's been a long time since we covered Veronica Mars, and I don't watch Veronica Mars, so I had to crowdsource. I had to like ask someone who's seen Veronica Mars. I'm like, let's just say I need advice and I'm Veronica Mars, who do I go to?
Poor Wallace didn't stand a chance, but I did love him,
I
though
think if it
but
was in the height of Veronica Mars,
yeah,
rewatchable,
probably
solid performance.
Probably. Are you just gonna keep going with Giles and pit him up against different challenges and seeing if he's gonna keep winning?
My brain is so channeled and tuned into Giles right now that he is the basis for every poll question I think of, but the next poll will not include Giles.
I mean, I think, to be honest, I think you're not alone. Giles is for sure one of the most popular characters on television ever. So he's always a good call. But I'm very excited for your next poll for sure.
Yeah, I don't know what it's gonna be, but I'll think of something.
And we did have a poll, a bit of feedback from Mariah Lovegood, who said, "Does that mean write-ins are accepted? If so, I vote for Keith Mars," which is actually Veronica Mars's dad, who I actually probably would have chosen as well.
Keith is a good choice too.
It's a good choice. Yeah.
Yeah. Next time there'll be write-ins. This time it was like the first poll we did, I got such an immediate reaction of people saying I forgot people, so I allowed write-ins. But this time it went for like 2 days without a write-in suggestion. So, yeah.
Do you want to just cover Joe's comment as well, which is also related to the poll?
Sure. So Joe Ludwigson at Total Average Joe commented on why he voted for Uncle Iroh, and he said, "Uncle Iroh, calm, wise, respectful, supportive, also loves you no matter what kind of teenagery, angsty stuff you pull." So true.
And we'll give you tea.
And we'll give you tons of tea that will turn you into a beautiful butterfly.
I voted for Uncle Iroh, but I didn't know who some of the people in the poll were. So,
and you could play Pie Show.
Yes.
So now you're back, Natalie. Do you want to tackle the next one?
Yeah, so this is just someone chipping in with a show that they think we should do in the future. Irving O, who's at Will Cycle for Beer, said, "I had a suggestion for a future rewatchable, Hannibal. I know it can be gross at times, but it was so good and beautiful." Yes, it was. And I'm going to say that we can't do Hannibal because Hannibal's not dead, and that there will be more Hannibal as soon as they are allowed to, in some format, make more Hannibal. There will be more Hannibal in some way. I have so much faith in that. So,
I hope so. And also, I feel like if we ever did do Hannibal, it would be such a comeback for Brian Fuller on Rewatchable, because we destroyed Pushing Daisies.
Oh, and it is such a beautiful show. I don't know how they got away with it, but it is stunning, and just, it's perfect. Like, it's perfect. And I don't know how a show that, it is gross, but you kind of become really, 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 not jaded, what's the word? Like,
used to it?
Yeah, kind of used to it, like,
I, like, started to appreciate how gross it was, because it's beautiful. Yeah, the murder scenes are so beautiful.
Yeah, you kind of come desensitized, but also, like, really interested. Like, I never got, like, after the very beginning, I never got grossed out by it, and I don't like gore at all. Some of the food scenes were worse for me, not because it was, like, human meat, but just because I, like, the gross, like, preparation of food, like mashing stuff in your hands, or, like, stuff like weird stuff, like whole fish or birds or whatever, I didn't really like. But it, in general, yeah, he managed to just give it this sheen of the murders, this sheen that just made it not quite as gross as it could be. The one that did quite gross me, Brittany, was the man on the saber-toothed tiger, like, that Will did, you know?
Yeah, I didn't like the person split into multiple layers across the beautiful
exhibit. That was sad for reasons. Well, anyway, I would love to talk about Hannibal forever, but I feel like it can't be unrewatchable because there's going to be more. That's my hot take on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Brittany and I will have plenty to talk about Brian Fuller's work in the next year, though, with two new shows coming out as well,
God, which
we're both very excited about, and everyone's very excited about. But Brittany and I, you know, we have our little Brian Fuller discussions, and yeah, it's going to be a time. But Hannibal's very good, and everyone should watch it. I wish they'd put it on Netflix or something so it could get like you know, some more legal views, you know, like, anyway.
Let's just tackle the last two comments here. So, Caitlin and Brittany, if you want to get those two.
Sure. Mandy Kay, talking about the last episode, said, "Did I miss it, or did no one talk about Angels of James Bond / Batman climb up the side of the building?" And we forgot. That was totally almost one of my favorite scenes, and then it didn't make it. But it was, that was quality. He pulls out the grappling hook thing, like climbs up the building, and it was pretty amazing.
And then another scene from last week, Alejandra Carlo, A. Carlo 15, says, I completely forgot about that angel ending. I had to go back and watch it a few times. It had me crying. Hashtag sick dance moves. Still great. My Netflix,
so
when I logged in,
great.
Picked up and I watched it again because it was like, oh, you left off here. And it was the credits again. I'm like, yeah, we'll watch that again before we go to the next episode.
Oh, I read something that was like they'd planned to do this stupid dancing in like another episode, and Joss was like, no, we have to save it for the right moment. Like it has to come out at the right moment. And it's just, it was so perfect. An angel going to a normal person party just to support Cordelia. Like that's so, and I think David Boreanaz had so much fun on this show. I really do.
I agree.
I would like to think he did. It seems like he did.
I think he did. And that brings us to the end of the episode. I absolutely adore that dancing. One of the best endings of an episode ever. next week we'll be talking about this year's Girl and the Prodigal, and we have Brittany's brainstorms to close us out. So what do you think's gonna happen?
All right, guys. So this year's Girl is all about Buffy reinventing herself. She is going to get over men and just realize that she is a fine, fierce, independent woman and does not need a romance to dictate her mood, because I'm over it. Riley's gone. She can finally move on from everyone, although he'll probably come back. But I want one episode where it's all about, this is my year. I am Buffy. Hear me roar. In Angel, the Prodigal, I think it's probably going to be an episode of the week. We have a demon who is coming in and he's going to threaten everything that exists in Los Angeles. And he's known as the Prodigal. Or it could be something about like Wesley being a prodigal, and I don't know. Something where one person is chosen and it's either going to be a demon or one of the core three. But I'm not sure who.
Interesting. I just looked up to see where we were up to, and this is not related to that at all, but small spoiler. What I just said, that we know Angel's first name, it is mentioned in the next episode. Just so you guys
know. Oh my god.
Yeah. Major spoiler.
Can't believe you said that, Natalie.
Sorry. The episode I was thinking of, I couldn't remember if we'd had it yet or not, but it is mentioned. So from here on out, after that episode, I will be referring to him as first name Angel. That's his surname.
Okay.
anyway.
Yes, I actually forgot about this episode. I'm excited. Both exciting stuff. But we will hear what the panel has to say about that next week. Thank you so much for listening to our discussion, and we cannot wait to hear your feedback. My name is Selena.
I'm Caitlin.
I'm Natalie.
And I'm Brittany.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
But it's good. It's recording. Everything looks good. I got show notes going.
I'm so sorry.
I was like, I was just saying how good everything was going. And then the call dropped and I was like, no.
That was my fault. I turned off the internet.